Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Tuesday, the 8th of July, and this is a special audio, one of two that I'll be doing tonight. The other one will be the regular audio at the end of Wall Street's close. What I'm doing now is an audio to cover the presentation that I gave last night at the East India Club in London as part of our Markets Now series. Now, I've done this once before, and a number of subscribers sent an email saying that they found it useful and they enjoyed it. And many more subscribers had said, well, could we have a webinar, in other words, a filming of the actual presentation at the East India Club, for which they would be willing to pay a moderate fee if we could do that and post that as well. Well, that I'm sure is something that we can do, not immediately, but we are certainly looking into this quite seriously, and I would hope to be able to offer that in the not too distant future, certainly before the end of the year. But now you can find the presentation, and the headline of it, the topic rather I should say, title of it is Investment Strategies Before the quote sweet spot unquote ends, and you'll find that under my copy in the website, and you'll be able to, if you open that, you'll be able to click through the slides as I give the talk. It'll be probably a slightly briefer version than what I did last night, so not to hold you too long. Now, I started off by talking about the fact that a lot of people were looking for the end of the market cycle. We could all see that the bull markets were maturing, particularly Wall Street. It was the main one, and that valuations had increased. And I mentioned what you'll probably certainly know yourselves, is that catching important tops in markets is harder than it is to identify major market bottoms. Major market bottoms are usually revealed by panics, and the indices get very overextended relative to their MAs, and a lot of people think the world's ending, or words to that effect. Now, in terms of bull market tops, you get a lot of nervousness. You get a lot of shifts that take place along the way, which I've been discussing in my other audios and in my written commentary. And you'll have warning signs of danger, but it is very, very difficult, as I said last night, to predict in advance whether the bull run that we were seeing on Wall Street was going to end last night or a good many months from now. But we can look at, we can look at the charts, and they will be alerting us to the possibility of significant change. So that's what we're going to do. And looking at these charts, my first comment was to say, at this stage of the stock market cycle, I favor laggards as they come into form. I don't want to be chasing something that's soaring in the markets. I don't want to be paying something that's on a high valuation, and there are a number of laggards. Moving on to the next slide in the series, the third slide, and that is the India Mumbai Sensex Index. And while it's had a very good move in the last few months, and really began to move up as soon as Narendra Modi announced that he was going to run for prime minister and was adopted by the BJP party to do so, India has been very much in form, easily one of the top performing, if not the top performing, stock market over that period. But prior to that, it had just been ranging for a little over 6 years. following that spike peak back in 2000 and 2008. Now, I think India is a market where governance is any is everything, and that's usually the case with emerging markets and also frontier markets. And I've commented on this sufficiently previously so that I don't have to discuss this too much, but I basically feel that this is the most important thing that's happened in India for at least a couple of decades, and that in my view, in the uncertain world of future forecasting or forecasting future events, that this is a market that during the course of Narendra Modi's first term could easily rise anything from, well, I'll take it from this, take it from the 20,000 level, which is when he announced that he was entering the race. This could easily go up 50 to 100%, possibly even more, over that time period. And it's certainly one that I favor. It's also a volatile market quite often. It hasn't been volatile recently. It's just been strong, and partly because I think there's a wall of money reassessing India. But again, the best thing to do is to buy these volatile markets following reactions, not when they're testing their highs. So I have a little slightly scratchy throat here. I'm going to just take another cough. Okay. Human frailties there within the cough department. And the next chart is the India Bombay Banks Index. Banks are a good lead indicator if a market's getting into serious trouble. So just keep an eye on those on those banks, and obviously there's no evidence of significant trouble at the current level. Next chart, India Sensex Index price to book. Now, India has a reputation for being a relatively expensive market, and it is on higher valuations than quite a few other markets. But if you look at that price to book, it is down near the lower side of India's trading range there over the last good many years, going back to 1990. So I think I won't be too concerned until this is starting to move up above that six level, which would and it's and it's, as you can see, it's under three right now. Next slide is Vietnam, and here I'm taking an emerging market. The chart pattern speaks for itself. I think this is the first step above the base, but the biggest risk, which I've written in, on the chart, is China. I think you know I think you know why, and that's because China decided that quite aggressively that it wanted to put a drilling rig in what was clearly Vietnam's territorial waters, and that's led to some quite angry words coming from Vietnam, and with China responding in kind. Now, this is something that China has instigated, so I can't predict what the political leaders in China are going to do, but it is disturbing, and they are throwing their weight around a little bit, and but that is the main risk, in my opinion, as far as Vietnam is concerned. Hopefully, common sense prevails in China. And if so, then I think Vietnam is a good growth candidate over the next few years, and will be one of the leaders here. Incidentally, when you take an area such as the Asia-Pacific region, which is obviously very big. It has by far the world's largest population regions there. It has some of the most dynamic economies, and they go from developed economies to emerging markets and also frontier markets. So how do international investors actually analyze these and choose the markets in which they want to invest? And it's not easy to do. For instance, what's the fundamental analysis of China? Sort of everybody has a different view. And I think it's also a situation that you know what China's good at. You can see that. But the problems tend to be secrets for quite a long time. And we don't always know that. So at any rate, what I suggested last night to the delegates at the markets now was you've got to look at charts, because in the voting machine versus the weighing machine argument for at least the medium, potentially very lengthy medium term, the price action will show you what international investors are actually favoring at the time. And if that's accompanied by significant breakouts, such as we see with India and also here with Vietnam, the moves can be really quite substantial overall. In other words, I'm saying that these multinational investors are going to find it very, very difficult to absorb all the fundamentals throughout the region, and not least in terms of individual equities, if they can even manage to do it as far as the overall economies are concerned. So they're going to be looking at charts and what's informed, what's actually performing. India is leading the way, as you've clearly seen. But some will say, I don't want a developing market, or let alone a frontier market. I want a developed country market. So now we go to Japan, and that first chart, that 50-year chart, shows you the massive peak that occurred right at the end of 1989 and early 1990, and Japan's been struggling ever since, as you know. I've talked a lot about this, so I'll wrap it up very quickly here, but my feeling is that Shinzo Abe is taking the right steps at long last, and Japan is taking the right steps at long last, with Shinzo Abe at the helm, and that they're probably going to get it right. And everybody on an international basis, at any rate, has been out of the Japanese stock market and only started to come back in when the policies, Shinzo Abe's plan, was first announced. And we got that very sharp rise of over 50%, but from a very, very low level. And subsequently, it's been ranging in what I maintain still is a very lengthy consolidation of those gains, and Japan is still an underowned stock market, and so I do like this among the developed country markets, as you know. Next slide is a more sensitive scale chart. This is a weekly chart, 10-year weekly chart, and you can see there's some resistance up here at this 1300 level for the TOPIX index from those two previous peaks. So I wouldn't be at all surprised to see some resistance encountered up there, or perhaps a small pullback. But really, provided the index doesn't come much below 1200 on a pullback, I wouldn't be worried about this very much. Then what I've also mentioned, the Japan Second Section Index, TOPIX, which is also overextended and testing an earlier high. So here also, we are susceptible to some sort of pullback and consolidation. But again, as long as this finds support, preferably above that 3500 level, I wouldn't be too worried about this. But I think this is a market that can easily move higher over the next 2 years or more. Next slide is the Australian stock market, the AS51 index, testing the upper side of its range. Australia is often a late performer, and one of the reasons for that is that it has a lot of natural resource shares, mining shares mainly, and these are highly cyclical, late in the cycle movers, and they are now beginning to move. And so historically, the Australian stock market has often been a late strong performer. It hasn't done that bad. It hasn't done all that badly up to this point, but I think some of its best gains probably lie ahead in this environment. And so I think that's an attractive play due to enter a period of cyclical outperformance. Next, we have the UK, and which is it's really quite a there's an international weighting in the index overall. You see those ascending triangular characteristics. I would certainly, as long as the rising lows within that big pattern are maintained, a progression of unbroken rising lows, I would certainly give the upside the benefit of the doubt. The next chart is BHP Billiton. It's a share that I hold and that a good many other investors hold. It's one of the biggest, if not the biggest, of the mining companies. And you can see that's threatening to break up out of this base formation development overall. Again, that's consistent with miners getting these strong moves late in the bull market cycles. And so I can easily see that high being challenged before, over what time? It's a pure guess over the time period, but by this time next year, I would hope to see that at least challenged or a move above that level. But what I do think, whatever happens to global markets generally, that probably BHP with its good yield and low valuation will remain in form beyond a peak on Wall Street and the UK and other European stock markets. And a little bit of light relief here. The UK market has a number of problems, at least as far as the central bank is concerned, and one of them is the cost of property prices overall. So thus the how much and when can I move in comment regarding the what I believe is a beehive. Another one, there have been a few scandals. Well, the press love these overall, but another Matt cartoon, I thought you might enjoy that one as well. And then the more serious one, which is the Queen Elizabeth christening the new ship. And there's Alex Salmond, well, creating a division, to put it mildly. I think the vote will... I don't think they will... I don't think Scotland will vote to pull out of the United Kingdom. I hope they don't, but we'll see. And it's something that can easily create a little bit of nervousness on both sides of the Scottish border. German DAX index, big round of phobia level up there at that 10,000 point. I talked about this also looking at the pattern just below it, that big broad trading range between roughly 9,000 and 9,700. And a concern of mine always is when we begin to see broadening patterns, bigger patterns, after significant moves to the upside, that tells you for nothing that supply and demand has moved into more into balance than we had seen previously. But it did break up out of that range, and provided it can hold those gains, and it's had a tough couple of days here yesterday, and and down I'm down again today. But really, as long as it doesn't pull back too far, in other words, if we get a normal reaction and consolidation, not break the 200-day moving average, for instance, I would still give the upside the benefit of the doubt. But again, the problem on this is, I to repeat this point that I said at the beginning, is that I said to delegates last night, is that it is tough spotting these top formations. You don't know, or predicting when. Sorry, I'll restate that. It's tough to know in advance when a market is actually going to peak, when it actually has peaked. Is it, in other words, are we now just seeing another reaction and consolidation, or is it going to be something bigger? Well, we're going to have to see some clear deterioration on the charts to indicate that it is something bigger. And you know that earlier in the year, I said that I thought there was a good chance that we would see a Wall Street led 10% or more correction between the second and third quarters of the year. Whether or not that's going to prove correct, we'll see. We've still got a good strong monetary tailwind, as you know. But the most important point that I've been emphasizing in recent months and recent weeks is that for the most part, the demand side still has the upper hand, evidenced by these upward trends that we see in so many markets, and that monetary conditions are still favorable. Therefore, I would be very surprised, for instance, to see Germany, Wall Street, UK, or any other market of significance move into an actual bear market without, well, against a background of accommodative monetary policy. Now, you've heard me discuss this before. Next slide is Wall Street's next secular bull market underway. Now, well, tantalizing question. Nobody knows. Of course, we can't know. We can only guess. But I certainly think that you could sum it up by saying, are we near the end of a cyclical bull market? But could this also be the beginning of, or are we also near the beginning of a big secular bull market, as in a couple of decades or more to the upside? And I think that's quite likely. I'm wondering, and you can't see me circle this, but you can see it. You'll see if you look back into the early 1980s. You'll see when you got a clear break up out of the range, and then we had a cyclical bear market decline into the first quarter of 1982. I would not be at all surprised to see a move of that magnitude before we get even clearer evidence of the next secular bull market. Which I think again, Wall Street will be one of the leaders of that, and the fundamentals are always very different for secular bull markets. But this time, and I think you've heard me say this before, that it'll be the accelerated rate of technological innovation that will be a huge factor. And it will be the fact that so much of the world is now run on a sort of a free enterprise a basis overall. So it's a capitalistic system, here overall. That was certainly not the case back in 1982. We had many other far worse forms of government. Another factor I'd mention that against that background of global capitalism, whether it's democratic capitalism or command capitalism, that we have the rising middle classes, the faster growth from a number of economies that had been dormant before they did move to a more capitalistic form of governance, rising middle classes, and the autonomies, last but not least, these big semi-autonomous companies, of which Wall Street has the largest number. These can profit greatly from the development of global GDP growth. And that, I think, will those factors will underpin the secular bull trend, along with one other hugely important factor, and that is my forecast that energy prices should come down gradually in real terms. The tricky part of that forecast is that that hasn't happened yet, and I wouldn't expect it to happen to have happened yet. But I said that by the end of the decade, that should be we should see evidence of that due to the proliferation of renewable technologies, due to some additional nuclear capacity. And I think also a very important factor is the natural gas and the fracking element. Why isn't Europe fracking? Well, you tell me on this, because they certainly need the lower energy costs. But those countries that do use the fracking and develop their own natural gas, a lot of countries around the world that could make themselves virtually independent, in addition to Wall Street, which has already done it. Okay, next slide. The S&P 500 index, just to show you that this we're overbought here in the short term, quite obviously. And you can also see that on stochastic indicators in the chart library. But we also have the proximity of a number of psychological levels, of which 2,000 on the S&P is the biggest one. So don't be surprised if we have a little bit of choppy activity here in the short term. NASDAQ also 4,500, that's the NASDAQ composite index, but just about every one of the major indices has a little psychological resistance barrier. Now, at one of my earlier talks, and also on the site, when that 4,000 level was being tested a couple of two, three months ago, that it needed to hold down there. And it did magnificently, as you can see, and pushed on to a new all-time high. I expect a reaction and consolidation here now, but it would really have to go down below that 4,000 to indicate that we are in a significantly more hostile environment for investors. Russell 2000, I think this and the this index in particular would be an early indicator of weakness. A somewhat smaller companies. And again, you saw how that just tested that a little below that 1100 level there, and also held, got back up to test the highs. But there's resistance up near those highs. It is overbought in the short term. But again, as long as it does not go back down and break beneath that level, it's around the 1080, 1070 area, then it's still okay. But the size of the patterns that we see here and also on the previous NASDAQ index does make me wonder, have we seen at least the penultimate peaks? Because very often when you're approaching eventual top areas and the end of a bull cycle, that it loses form, it loses consistency, a lot of choppy activity, and then it gets at least one more little push to the upside, which is not maintained. Well, we'll see soon enough, because we're now likely to get the pullback and consolidation of those gains. And as long as that pullback doesn't cause some really significant technical damage, I would still give the somewhat higher levels the benefit of the doubt. What could end Wall Street's bull run? The next slide. And that's slide number 21 in the sequence. Well, I mentioned here a spike in the price of Brent crude oil. That's an obvious one. Last big spike in Brent crude oil, 2008. And that was the first contributor to that devastating setback that we saw, which also included the even more serious problem of the credit crisis, recession, all the scandals. But Brent crude can certainly be a game changer, and a spike upwards would be. Now, also a surge in U.S. 10-year government bond yields. That's certainly not a threat at present. And any other exogenous shock to the financial system, whether that's coming from the Middle East, the Asian region, perhaps if China was a bit reckless, or some other event that is unknown at this stage. Those would be the three factors. So we can look at charts for the first two, at least. But first, you get a cartoon, and I thought this was hysterical when I saw this Matt cartoon. I thought I was putting money into ISIS. I'll go on to the next chart, and here we have the Brent crude oil. Brent's the one to watch, and here it's much more indicative of the international oil market, and it got up to 116, I think, on an intraday level, hovered near 115, but has come back down. And I think it's just a little bit below 111, and so still very much in that range overall. So we're not getting a spike, but there certainly are risks given all the unrest that we're seeing in the Middle East generally, but particularly in Iraq as well. It's not that easy, I think, for the ISIS group to get in there and disrupt Iraq's oil production. But it's a dangerous situation. So the risk is higher than it should actually be. There are steps that can be taken. Of course, the U.S. could reduce its strategic stockpile, which it doesn't really require to help the global economy, and it would help if Saudi Arabia stopped funding ISIS. I think they may have already done that, but let's hope so. Okay, next slide. So oil, but the big point about oil is that it's not a threat at the moment. Here are the U.S. 10-year government bonds, and I've got three colored lines. One a little bit above the 3% level. That would be a yellow light of caution going off if as and when bond yields move above that level. They're nowhere near it here right now, but when things are really in change mode, moves can occur quickly. But at any rate, this is also in yields. This is sort of a bottoming out, overall long, lengthy bottoming out process. Overall, in my opinion, you've heard me say that before plenty of times. But as and when, and again, there's no threat of this in the short term, but over the medium to longer term, we will certainly see this push higher. A lot will depend on this, unless we see deflation and permanent slow growth recession, which is certainly not my view, as you know. Again, sort of a little above that 3.5, that would be an additional warning signal, and I think red lights would be flashing here above the 4% level, and that would be dangerous for stock markets. But a lot depends on the speed with which those levels are achieved. If it occurred very quickly, it would be much more frightening. If it occurs over a period of many months, markets would be far calmer. Okay, what about precious metals? And we're into the end zone here, the last stage of this presentation. And I put these up in order of palladium, because palladium, again, this is all about Russia as the dominant producer. And Russia is holding back supplies from the market. They want the higher prices. At some point, they'll sell it, and when they do come in and sell it, you'll see a deterioration in the chart action. It's up near a psychological resistance level from those 210 and 211 highs in here right now, but there's a lot of support underneath. I don't see any evidence that this will not go higher. I think it will go higher, in other words. Until Russia starts to sell palladium again quite aggressively, and the chart should show us when that's beginning to take place. Platinum looks quite basey, as you can see, and that is about Russia and particularly South Africa, and so there are some supply concerns there. Looking at gold, well, we know that a lot of people were talking gold down a few months ago, and some big bank reports coming out saying that gold was going to go to at least 1,000. That hasn't been proved wrong or impossible just yet, but I think that given the lead of palladium and platinum, and given the ranging potential base formation characteristics, Here, I maintain that bearish view that I described a moment ago is probably wrong, and a sustained move above 1,400 would provide clear evidence that this was indeed a base formation. So I think it's sideways to higher here. I don't see any evidence that that's not the case. And also silver. Again, the laggard, but it's high beta gold, and if gold starts to move up above that $1,400 level in the next few months, I think you'll see silver pushing up very quickly through that $25 level and more. And that's pretty much it. There are a few other cartoons on there that I did not use last night, but I left them on the slide, and I hope you found this useful, and thanks for your attention, and all the very best. Bye bye.